Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 34. The Bucky Doesn't Stop Here. A reading from the book And It Came to Pass, Not to Stay by R. Buckminster Fuller, plus some other notes and background on the man himself. Section from the book reads, amongst the American Indians, it was, still is in its way, the nations, not the chiefs or individuals who controlled the land. The Indians assumed that they had only the hunting, fishing, cultivation, and dwelling rights. All the land, water, and sky belonged exclusively to the Great Spirit, and the same concept was held by Africans, Eskimos, and Austronesians. But it was long ago conceded in Europe and Asia that whoever owned the productive land controlled the wealth. In Europe and Asia, the many individual warlords controlling the lands were the owners of all wealth. They were the, quote, wealthy, end quote. How did these disparities of viewpoints and controls occur? Many direct questionings of audiences of more than 1,000 each have disclosed that no matter what, humans think wealth may be, all of the humans questioned felt that no matter how much wealth they might have, they could not alter one iota of yesterday. This is your host, the Monk. Thanks for listening. And I'm going to start off with a bit from Bucky Fuller himself.
Only entitled to stay alive if you really commit yourself and all your experiences to other human beings in a very, very complex, complete, out-and-out way. I told you how much pressed I was principles of this idea precessionally of going off 90 degrees did not seem to be illogical to me. In fact, it seemed very logical, but it never been tried, and so all my contemporaries are tied up with after in a living. And I said, I think this is just what we ought not to be doing. We ought to be saying, what do my experiences teach me needs to be done, which, if not done, will find world society in great trouble, which, if attended to, will find them in advantage. And what would I need to know in order, over above what I now know that made me see that that is so, what more would I need to know in order to be able to do something effective about it? I said, those are the kind of questions I thought we ought to be doing. And I then also then came to asking myself a number of other questions. And I said, the only condition then of your staying is that you are committed to the others, and number one, you have to do your own thinking. Everything that's happened to you really relates very much to your accepting other people's thinking, trying to play games that you didn't have your heart really in. So that this is going to be a very new kind of discipline. And you're going to have to be absolutely trustworthy that you really are committing yourself to other people. There's no cheating on this thing, not just this way you arranged not to kill yourself now, and then you're going to start cheating on it. You're going to have absolute conviction that you'll be able to carry through for your full lifetime. Well, I asked myself quite a number of things, and number one, I said, all right, you've experienced an enormous number of human beings who are deeply moved by their religions that they've been taught by their families. They belong to very large, great religions, have great fervor. And I said, all right, I've got the number one question you're going to have to ask yourself is, if you're going to do your own thinking and give up, this means giving up all belief. And I've been taught to believe various things. I've accepted them more or less wholeheartedly. I said, I'm going to have to give up all those things. I've got to start absolutely from experience, experiential base. But I said, do you have any personal experiences which give you reason to have to assume some greater intellect operating in the universe than that of man? I said, I'm just overwhelmed by the evidence of that. These generalized principles themselves, which can only be intellectually just detected, and they're utterly intellectual, they're weightless, a generalized case is absolutely intellectual. And there's an integrity, all these principles are all interaccommodative, so that I'm overwhelmed by an a priori greater intellect operative. I'm going to talk more about this on Friday, but I just want, that was very much one of the important questions right at the outset. So I said, then I'm going to assume that in doing my own thinking, I'm going to try to understand whether I am really, whether a great intellect thinks it is worthwhile for me to carry on. And what would be the requirements of a comprehensive integrity of our universe? Because it's looking out for all humanity, looking out for the universe. Why do we have these generalized principles? What is the universe itself trying to do?
Do Your Own Thinking, a short YouTube bit by R. Buckminster Fuller. Interesting speech cadence and rhythm. Kind of takes a little while to kind of catch on and follow all that he's saying and seemingly downloading from a very often technological cosmic perspective. Kind of follows the some previous shows with the Buddha talking about doing your own thinking. And he seems kind of like a cross between Alan Watts and John Cage, but from more of a physical scientific angle. One of my favorite stories, which I read, was maybe not true, but either way, it's still a good story. So I'm gonna tell it briefly. Was that Bucky Fuller was at a low point in his life and had walked to a river and was considering suicide, and right before that he stopped and he thought, wait a second, what if I just totally devoted my life to helping the world and other people? And he turned around and walked away, and the rest, as they say, is history. A little bit of background information from Wikipedia on Richard Buckminster Bucky Fuller. He was born in 1895 and lived to 1983, an American architect, systems theorist, author, designer, inventor, and futurist. Published more than 30 books, inventing and popularizing such terms as spaceship Earth, ephemeralization, and synergetic. He also developed numerous inventions, mainly architectural designs, including the widely known geodesic dome. Carbon molecules, known as fullerenes, were later named by scientists for their resemblance to geodesic spheres. And those fullerenes are also nicknamed the Buckyball. Buckminster Fuller was the second president of Mensa from 1974 to 1983. He was very aware of the finite resources the planet has to offer and promoted a principle that he termed ephemeralization, which, in essence, according to futurist and Fuller disciple Stuart Brand, Fuller coined to mean, quote, doing more with less. In his 1970 book, this is where he certainly echoes Alan Watts, in his 1970 book, I Seem to Be a Verb, he wrote, I live on Earth at present, and I don't know what I am. I know that I am not a category. I am not a thing, a noun. I seem to be a verb, an evolutionary process, an integral function of the universe. Very indigenous perspective, too. He traveled and lectured a lot. He was a big hit with college students and the younger generations. He promoted the geodesic dome as a affordable world housing on a global level. And when I went to a exhibit of his art and some of his architecture at the Whitney Museum, picked up this book called "And It Came to Pass, Not to Stay." And part of the reason, similar with my finding the Tennessee Williams poetry book, is that the book is in very short lines, and it reads like, it looks like a epic poem, and it reads somewhat that way. And it's what Fuller called lyrical and philosophical, including 7 essays in a form he called, quote, ventilated prose. So I'm going to start with reading the back of the book here. And this is excellent for the process of writing, or the artist, and sometimes how to juggle the many ways that information can come through. I know at a certain point in writing, writing and artistic expression, I realize that whatever the medium or the form that is given to me is what I'll do. So as much as I love poetry, you know, it's like, if the form changes, I'll go with the form. So it's kind of like the message is more important to me than the form. So this is background notes from Bucky Fuller, and then some about him. I have found myself from time to time spontaneously and almost unrestrainedly preoccupied in writing out my thoughts, which, as I reconsidered them and redefined them, eventuated in the present volume, which I call Mental Mouthfuls and Ventilated Prose, which may be poetry also. While Buckminster Fuller may have been noncommittal about whether his mental mouthfuls and ventilated prose was indeed, quote, poetry, others had made the leap. He was awarded in 1962 the prestigious Charles Eliot Norton Professorship of Poetry at Harvard University. In fairness, while joining the ranks of T.S. Eliot, E.E. Cummings, and Robert Frost in receiving the honor, the ranks also included poets in the larger sense. Musicians Igor Stravinsky, Aaron Copland, fellow architect engineers Felix Candela and Pier Luigi Nervi, painter-photographer Ben Shahn, and playwright-novelist Thornton Wilder, among many others. As in almost all aspects of his life, form always followed function, and by paying attention to nature's design patterns, he sought to discover what would yield, quote, the most with least, end quote. Not surprisingly, when starting from scratch and attempting to express himself most economically, Bucky often found himself arriving at his ventilated prose. Most of Buckminster Fuller's writings evolved in an organic process. A lecture becomes an essay. A paragraph of a letter serves as inspiration, or the beginning of an essay morphs into a poem. This, coupled with the careful way he organized his remarkable archive, now at Stanford University and called in 1976 by archivists from the Smithsonian Institute the most extensive personal archive in existence, allowed him to weave and integrate his works over time. And It Came to Pass, - Not to Stay, is a stellar example of this process. One section of his archive is what he called his manuscript files. Dating from 1920 to his passing in 1983, the manuscript files contain many manuscripts in varying degrees of preparation, some published, some not. As a facet of his organizational system, each manuscript, I suppose once it was in process and became official, received a code composed of the name and date. So, under this system, And It Came to Pass, Not to Stay, officially became a manuscript on January 1, 1976, with the designation "And It Came to Pass" in parentheses, "Not to Stay." Yet the work itself contains pieces written as early as 1966. Now, the series editor is Jamie Snyder, one of his grandsons. So this is going to be from the introduction, which tells a lot about Fuller. And first, a quote from Bucky Fuller: "All of humanity now has the option to make it successfully and sustainably. by virtue of our having minds, discovering principles, and being able to employ these principles to do more with less. And to show the scope of his worldview, another quote, to make the world work for 100% of humanity in the shortest possible time through spontaneous cooperation without ecological offense or the disadvantage of anyone. Whew, talk about, you know, that inclusive, indigenous perspective, and you can see the scientific, you know, he's talking about everything in the shortest time, you know, time frame, and how to do it, and the ecology, and it just, it shows the breadth of his view. So here's from the introduction from his grandson, one of his grandsons. It is a great honor to write the introduction for this new edition of three of my grandfather Buckminster Fuller's most important books, Operating Manual for Spaceship Earth, Utopia or Oblivion, and It Came to Pass, Not to Stay. To be able to introduce his work to a new generation of concerned humans at this critical moment in human history is indeed a privilege. These works, written 30 to 40 years ago, are time capsules of wisdom for which we are now ready. They provide desperately needed keys that can help us unlock the doors to a sustainable future for all of humanity. During the last few years of his life, my grandfather, my grandmother Anne, and I were living together in Los Angeles, just around the corner from my mother's home. Anne lived at this house full-time, while Bucky continued lecturing around Spaceship Earth, orbiting in and out of this West Coast base and his central office in Philadelphia. One day when I was driving him to the airport for one of his many trips, he said to me, I'm presuming it's Jamie, but it looks like Jaime, J-A-I-M-E. Jamie, we have half an hour now during this drive. What is the most important thing we can be thinking about? I don't remember specifically how we responded on that occasion, but I am sure it centered on the big picture of making the world work for 100% of humanity. You never caught Bucky veering from that focus. It was the North Star by which he always navigated. And thus, in the few short moments that we have together during this introduction, I would like to begin where Bucky always began, by reflecting on, quote, what is the most important thing we can be thinking about right now, end quote. In the many years I was privileged to share with him, whether in our family setting, working with him on projects, traveling as his assistant, or producing his public lectures, he always spoke about how humanity was entering a critical moment. His research led him to conclude that we had reached a fundamental fork in the road and were confronted with the most profound choice imaginable, utopia or oblivion for all of humanity. He asserted that for the first time in human history we had gained the potential to destroy life on this planet as we know it and at the same time acquired the know-how to meet the basic survival needs, food, shelter, energy, water, etc., of 100% of humanity on a sustainable basis, using then-present resources and technology and phasing out the use of fossil fuels and nuclear energy. That touches in with, you know, Noam Chomsky mentioning nowadays that nuclear issues as a main concern for the survival of the planet, and many people like Bill McKibben and others saying that the XL pipeline and fracking is along with the climate change is really putting us at that point of you know, make it or break it decisions. So these are things that Bucky Fuller, you know, was saying years ago, and so, you know, there's much to learn from him. Just another paragraph or so from this introduction part. I was in the audience for hundreds of Bucky's lectures during the 28 years we shared life. Whether he was discussing planetary trends, nature's principles of design, the engineering strategies of his inventions, or how a little individual can be effective as an agent of change, he never lost sight of this big picture of our world. Living and traveling with him day after day, I can truly say he was a person who lived his every moment with the perspective that our world was in an emergency, and that his every choice, his every action, as well as ours, could be the straw that broke the camel's back or made the difference in assuring our survival. Bucky's focus on Earthians' critical moment was indeed powerful and persuasive to many of those with whom he came in contact. I guess that's one of his phrases, Earthians. So, a few sections from his words themselves. First of all, the book starts off with a quote. Tell me in 5,000 written words, end quote, equivalent at my oral rate to 3/4 of an hour's discourse, quote, what you have learned in your lifetime, end quote. said Norman Cousins. "That ought to be easy," said I. 3 weeks have gone by. I recall that, 38 years ago, I invented a routine, somewhat similar to muscle development, accomplished through a day-by-day lifting of progressively heavier weights. But my new intellectual routine dealt with the weightless process of human thought development, which subject is known to the scholars as epistemology. And I have learned that such words as epistemology stop most of humanity from pursuing such important considerations as the development of the thought processes. So my new discipline was invented for dealing even with the ephemeral, which word means conceptual but weightless, as is, for instance, the concept of circularity. My new strategy required that on successive days I ask myself a progressively larger and more inclusive question, which must be answered only in the terms of experience. Hearsays, beliefs, axioms, superstitions, guesses, opinions were and are all excluded as answered resources for my particular intellectual development game. However, when lacking any possible experience clues, I saw that it was ineffectual to attempt to answer such questions as, for instance, why I or why anything. And as I was reading that, I realized I wanted to read it a bit choppily, because that's the way the lines are, very short, and it reminded me of Youssef Komunyakaa talking about some of his short-lined poems and how it sort of drives it's like a downward driving forward in a certain sense. And some other bits here. Rejecting the word creativity for use by any other than the great intellectual integrity progressively disclosed as conceiving, both comprehensively and anticipatorily, the complex interpatternings of reciprocal and transformative freedoms in pure principle, which apparently govern universe and constitute the verb God. I go along with the 5,000-year-old philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, which says action is the product of the qualities inherent in nature. It is only the ignorant man who, misled by personal egotism, says, "I am the doer." End quote. I am most impressed with the earliest recorded philosophical statements by unknown individuals of India and China. Through millenniums, the philosophies have become progressively compromised and complicated. I am an explorer, however, of the generalized design science principles, which seemingly differentiate man from animal and mind from brain. The word generalization, as used in the literary sense, means a very broad statement. It suggests covering too much territory, too thinly to be sound. The literary men say this is too general. This book is an interesting blend of philosophical concepts and some of his scientific background. And here's a bit here. The relationships between four or more items are always greater in number than the number of items. Ergo, there are always more chords than notes. And chords by themselves are not music. It takes two to make a baby, but it takes God to make two. God is twoing. God is threeing. God is multiplying by dividing. The second law of thermodynamics, entropy, is also, as we have learned, the law of increase of the random element. I.e., every system loses energy, but synergy means behavior of whole systems, unpredicted by the behavior of any separate part. And here he kind of plays with the wordplay. The energy and synergy are capital EN-ERGY. Energy behaves entropically, synergy behaves syntropically. God is entropy and God is syntropy. God is synergy, God is energy, and God is always a verb, the verbing of integrity. Have not read this entire book because, as you can tell, it's full of... It takes a bit of brain power to kind of, sort through what he's saying and figure out, which parts are just sort of playful and where he's really touching on something that, is wanting to be remembered. And since the economy is so tied with, world issues and, as mentioned, his geodesic dome being, affordable way to really house people around the world compared to the the guy who ran for mayor of New York, the rent is too damn high party, which is, you know, really when you think about businesses and home, the amount of rent is so connected with the banksters that, you know, that's a whole nother show there. But here's Bucky Fuller again from his book. The magnitude of money wealth is manifest as the number of healthily adequate and regenerative present and forward days of the minorities is life support and accommodation for which the lethally intercompetitive sovereign states, transnational corporations, cartels, and capital anarchists have organized the world's physical and metaphysical resources to provide, while also diverting a large amount of the evolution realized increases in scientific and technical capabilities exclusively into money-making for a few or into armed protection of their special individual advantaging. Real wealth is manifest as the magnitude to which the effectiveness of realized money wealth can be multiplied by full intercooperative effort of all humanity when using their world-around combined physical and metaphysical resources as practically realizable at any one moment of ever-advancing energy efficiency, ever regeneratively reinvested exclusively and directly only in the support and freedom's accommodation of all human life. And he explores the origins of things. One section begins, always excitedly acknowledging the a priori infinite mystery implicitly revealed as that which, though relevant, always remains undiscovered and unexplained and is popularly overlooked altogether. Very much the beginning of the Tao Te Ching right there. In the momentary excitement of preoccupation only with that which is discovered and especially with realizations of the new human advantaging significance of each great scientific discovery, wherein, for instance, Isaac Newton discovers the rational geometrical rate of change, characterizing the interactiveness of any two celestial bodies while their relative distances apart vary only at an arithmetical rate, which interattractiveness itself, let alone its inversely varying second power rate of gain, is neither manifest nor implied by any of the constant physical characteristics of either of the interattracted celestial bodies, when either is considered only separately and only in the unique terms of one or the others, integral dimensions, mass chemistry, and independent electromagnetic properties. That's a mouthful. Boy, I think this would make great training for elocution. If you're into theater, read some Bucky Fuller. It'll help your diction. A little bit later on in the book, he does, pay homage or homage, you know, as he mentioned the Indians and East Indian and China, ancient cultures. Here he says, the cosmic hunting and fishing rights will be universal. The only owner will be the Great Spirit, the non-anthropomorphic god of the Indians, Eskimos, and all of Earth's earliest free-ranging humans will be recognized. Mind will have returned into complete ascendancy over matter. Towards the end of the book, he also sort of explains out what was in the beginning of him quoting about, really to really exist, it's a matter of helping others. We go through phases where we're working on our own stuff, but I think I agree with him ultimately. What we do is for and connected with others. Here he writes, selfishness is inherently anti-synergetic. Synergy can be socially realized only through spontaneous unselfishness. In due course, wisdom discovers the cosmic evolution pattern of its own inexorable growth to metaphysical mastery of physical muscle, brain cunning, and anti-synergetically monopolized physical power. As dominance of the metaphysical over physical is accomplished, and of wisdom-born vision over short-sightedness and fear-engendered selfishness, the perverse affairs of progressive self and other discovering Earthians begin to transform into compatibility with the omni-integrity of cosmic totality. So more big mouthfuls, and you get the sense of, you know, his scope is really holistic, and looking at the world from, you know, that's why he said Spaceship Earth. He was purporting that, you know, it's all one and it's all connected, and we need to see it that way. That reminds me of some study. I think it was a bunch of CEOs or corporate guys that they did some study where they did like a something in a capsule, and an enclosed capsule, and their responses were very different. They realized that everything had to get along and work together to keep the capsule, you know, everything alive. And it was different from the perspective of, you know, oh, I could just chop up this area and it won't really affect the whole globe. But that's, you know, that's what we're realizing now, is that is not true. You can, you know, get away with it for a little while, but, you know, as Bucky and people are saying nowadays, that little while is over, really. You know, we depending on how you look at it, I mean, it's time to get busy and do what we need to do. Maybe one more bit here. Wisdom is the consciousness of a confidence overriding the consciousness that there coexists a complex, comprehensive integrity of omni-inter-accommodative, eternally generalized principles permeating and embracing every demonstrably limited, special case, temporal experience, which non-simultaneous complex of phenomena ipso facto can never be, both individually and simultaneously considered and comprehended. Okay. And here's one more bit. Astrophysics makes it evident to consciousness that there are no fixed directions of universe that can logically be identified as up or down. Consciousness finds the only reliable directional assumptions to be in, out, and around in respect to various event foci of experience, celestial, terrestrial, and nuclear, wherefore there can be no further meaningful use of the words up and down. All right, I looked up on YouTube a song to see, just entered Buckminster Fuller song. Another thing I wanted to mention, he invented, that was at the Whitney Museum exhibit that I went to with my mom, and they had a sample Dymaxion car. It's actually a three-wheeled, I think it got incredible gas mileage, I forgot the details, you can look it up, electric car, whatever. So Bucky, again, way ahead of his time. I looked online to find some song to go out with, and a singer that I had not heard of, Narina Palot, or Palo, P-A-L-L-O-T, has a song entitled Buckminster Fuller. And the lyrics are a little hard to hear, so I'll post those up on the website, and I'm going to read them now because they're beautiful as a poem as well. A song, Buckminster Fuller. Last night I dreamt of him, Buckminster Fuller, force that drives, the flower brings, grace to caterpillars, slowly creeping, drunk with meaning. Things unseen are not unmade, and I am just a little thing, made like all others, humble as a bumblebee, my heart set on the moon, full force feeling, here is meaning, things unseen are not unmade. How was it, how is it, how was this great world grown? Things unseen are already there, slowly creeping, drunk with meaning, things unseen are not unmade. So thank you very much for listening, and enjoy.
Last night I dreamt of him, Buckminster Fuller, the force that drives the flower brings, grace to caterpillars.